speak louder or click the loudness button on your telephone if you have one.
I'm not massive of volume on here.
And shout.
Okay, how does that go? Can't you turn up the volume there?
They're trying.
I'll keep talking, and I'll let you adjust the technical side. Meredith will be posting the slides, which I will call out as I go along.
Please yell.
I'm starting to say my charges for a longer time scale and talking about basic theory and data regarding genetic alleles, mortality schedules, and our place in nature as seen through the evolutionary theory of senescence, going back to some of the major themes that began to produce in the set. Are you hearing me better now?
Yes.
No? Yes?
But shout, please.
On slide one, I want to start by thanking my collaborators, David Steinfeld, Steve Evans, and Kamel Ferranti, who is with you today on that side of the country, and especially thank Richard Sussman, who's been the one who's nourished this field since the beginning. And I thank the Committee on Population, and I especially thank Matt and Meredith for leading this new phase. Turning to slide two, it's been 17 years since the book Between Zeus and the Salmon, and I'm going to structure my talk around 17 slides. Over these 17 years, biodemographers have been endeavoring to understand commonalities and differences across species. And we began especially with commonalities and differences in age-specific demographic schedules and understanding them in the light of evolution. Turn to slide three, and you see some of the principal commonalities illustrated in a graph in a collection by Shiro Uryuchi. These are the commonalities that really launched this field. And what you see on the axes on a logarithmic scale are age-specific mortality rates. They begin as straight lines, signifying the familiar Gompertz exponential phase, and they taper at extreme ages into plateaus. They cover an extremely diverse collection of species. The slides are arranged so you can't see the labeling, and that is the point. What you see is a remarkable similarity in the shapes across divergent species. Turning to slide four, the Committee on Population, since Zeus and the Salmon, has been carrying the torch forward and put together three predecessors to our present volume: Volume Cells and Surveys, Offspring, and Biosocial Surveys. One of the important contributions of this CPOP effort in these volumes was to prepare the way for longitudinal social surveys to collect genetic marker data. What's different now for our volume today? We now have such data. We have it both for our own analysis and also, importantly, for gaining understanding among the demographic community of what genome sequencing can tell us. I think Richard Sussman described it as playing in a sandbox, gaining hands-on experience with what a much broader community of biologists and geneticists is bringing to the fore that can influence our demographic thinking. Now, biodemographers have also developed new theory, especially new theory in three directions: stochastic vitality, optimal life histories, which Paul Hooper, Hilly Kaplan, and Michael Gerber, and which Ronald Lee will be discussing in this meeting, and thirdly, mutation accumulation. And it's mutation accumulation which is what my theme to talk about. Turning to slide five, of these three dimensions, these three directions of theory, it's this third one, mutation accumulation, that is explicitly connected to alleles in the genome, specifically to alleles called single nucleotide variants. What's a single nucleotide variant, or SNV? Many of you know, but I have a little game for explaining it. In any stretch of DNA, different ones of us have mostly the same letters. You can see them there. Cat tag, cat tag, cat tag, cat tag, cat gag. Whoops, cat gag. There's a one-letter difference. That's a single nucleotide variant. And when you see them, they are generally deleterious. They're a deleterious form of the genetic code. And these forms are called alleles. So we're talking in this theory about the relationship between the millions of single nucleotide variants now identified by genome studies, relationships between those and demographic schedules. So that's the data side. For theory, David, Steve, and I have developed a mathematical model with demographic structure, that is adding demographic structure to classical genetic mathematical models, and this is a model for the accumulation of deleterious alleles over long periods of evolutionary history. Mutation accumulation is one of the central processes in the evolutionary theory of senescence, and was posed by Sir Peter Medawar back in 1951 as a solution to what was then an unsolved problem in biology, namely why organisms age. Turning to slide 6, I want to give you the picture briefly of how mutation accumulation works and why it has implications for aging. So I want to suppose that each allele in some group or team of alleles, lots of alleles in a team, each one of them acts to raise mortality at some specific stretch of ages. You see on the graph a net paternity, a variant on a net paternity function. If the alleles act early, as on the left, a lot of net reproduction is lost. You see the alleles killing people off in their 20s on average, and the difference between those curves is lost net reproduction for those who carry those alleles. However, if the alleles act late in age on the right, it's the same amount of the mortality increase, but little net reproduction is being lost. So when that happens, the alleles hang around. They're passed on to later generations, just a little less than if they weren't there. And the alleles accumulate in larger numbers due to this weaker force of natural selection, making mortality rise as days of procreating, parenting, and grandparenting run short. This is one of those phrases I like, procreating, parenting, and grandparenting, reminding us that the evolutionary consequences for later generations come not only from the having of offspring, but from their nurturing and promoting their own survival and eventual reproduction. Turn to slide 7, a brief summary of the pictures of the model. I should say the models apply to fertility and infant and child mortality, but today I'm talking about adult mortality, which is where most of the progress is being made. So under plausible conditions, these models lead to predictions of equilibrium of levels of alleles, and as one posits, profiles for their action, how they affect the age-specific schedule of adult mortality, we come up with theory that may help explain these commonalities, the Gomperzian rises, the late age plateaus that I've been talking about, that I showed you as the foundations of biodemography. I'm not going to go into that part of the theory today, but I do want you to have this picture of a predictive mathematical model with alleles grouped in teams according to their age-specific action, with an equilibrium in which inflow from new mutations is balancing outflow from natural selection. Now, in the small print on the slide, there's something I need to mention, because some of you, many of you, may have seen claims coming out of the Rostock Institute asserting that mutation accumulation, this is a quote from the title of the Danko paper that I reference on the slide, mutation accumulation may just be a minor force in shaping life history traits. I'm afraid in that paper, and the paper citing it, that claim came from a technical mistake. To shorten computation, the authors imposed an arbitrary bound on mutations. The bound did shorten computation by excluding most of the effect they were trying to measure. In one case, excluding more than 99% of the effect of mutation accumulation that they were attempting to measure. We turn to slide 8. Really, there's no room left for debate on the question of the importance over evolutionary time of mutation accumulation. In genome sequence studies, we're already seeing, big as life, these deleterious alleles, which the mutation accumulation theory talks about. Now, they're numbering at least in the hundreds per individual, drawn from a wide pool of thousands of deleterious alleles. And we also know from something called Haldane's principle, that I'll mention again, that those alleles had to have major effects on fitness, as Darwinian selection was painting up the shapes of life histories over evolutionary time. So on slide 9, I try to give you a sense of what I'm talking about in evolutionary time, a very different time scale from what Tuck and Bert Singer have been talking about in the first slide. So art is long, life is fleeting. The painting of shapes of life histories over evolutionary time means hundreds of generations, up to 1,000 generations, reaching back to mutations whose copies form our legacy of genetic load. And it's over those long periods that we know that these processes we're talking about had major effects on fitness. We turn to slide 10. Slide 10 looks a little more demographic for you. There's a principle I mentioned due to J.B.S. Haldane, which David Steve and I succeeded in generalizing. And that principle allows us to infer a rate for the mutations whose derived copies are the deleterious alleles that are going to be held in an equilibrium of mutation and selection. And the way we are able to infer this mutation rate is by drawing on measurements of hunter-gatherer life tables. Helle and Michael are the people who've assembled this for us. I'm drawing on their population development review, called review article from 2007. So I think I have just a minute or two to introduce you to how this inference is made, connecting the anthropological story with estimates of mutational rates. Can't go into full detail, but I'd like to give you a flavor for it. So on that slide, these are survivorship curves, and on the slide, the dark line, that's the average hunter-gatherer survivorship curve from the first five of Helle and Michael's collection. On the bottom, you see something that looks like a net maternity schedule, but if you look closely, you'll see it goes up beyond age 40 or 50. It goes on at lower levels over these ages of nurturing, recognizing the role that parenting and grandparenting play. And this is based essentially on extending a Cole-Trussell model fertility schedule. So it's something, roughly speaking, that we think reflects the evolutionary importance of survival of individuals to their survival and reproductive success of their offspring. And then what you see up at the top in that dashed line is a survivorship curve for adult survival. I'm only talking now about adult mortality. A survivorship curve for adult survival, which would come if all you had was extrinsic mortality, age independent from a constant hazard involving risks that didn't operate internally but operate externally, culling people in the risks of life. And so the maximum difference in survival curves that you can get between the dashed line, it's a hypothetical construction, and the solid line, that maximal difference there is what the most that age-specific alleles could be promoted. The mortality, it may be less because there may be reasons that a baseline level, not driven by genetic load, could be less favorable than the extrinsic mortality, but it can be much more. And because we see these alleles and geneticists are able to see that they have deleterious implications, it also can't be too much less. So it's in comparisons of these hunter-gatherer curves that we get something like bounds on the rates of mutation and thus on the loss of fitness that this theory is seeking to account for. And the great value of that, in contemporary work right now going on, is that when you pair the estimates of loads that are coming from the genome sequence studies and pair it with these calculations from Haldane's principle, you end up with estimates for the antiquity of the mutant alleles. And so that's the most important thing in calibrating these models and understanding where in evolutionary time the genetic load originates. So turning to slide 11, I want to try to sum up the picture by sketching a big picture with a series of questions, pulling back from the technical sides of this theory and trying to see where's the big story going. So I'm going to have questions and the answers that evolutionary demography is proposing to them. Question A. Why are human mortality rates not funny functions of age for adults? Answer. Human mortality still bears marks of long shaping in the challenging environments of human prehistory. On slide 12, question. How do messages from human prehistory come down to us? Answer. Alleles with small age-specific effects originating in deleterious mutations of long ago are still being inherited in substantial numbers by each of us. On slide 13, why small? Answer. Alleles with big bad effects are rapidly removed by natural selection. On slide 14, why would it be harder to explain regularities in terms of alleles with big effects? Answer. All outcomes as we see them come out of interactions between genetic potential and environmental opportunity. Big effects bespeak big potential plus big opportunity. And big opportunity means a larger role for the special features of the contemporary environment about which Tuck has been talking. slide 15. Why would it be easier, on the other hand, to explain regularities in terms of alleles with small effects? Answer, alleles with small effects entering the population long ago were long buffeted by natural selection, and they are expected to have frequencies that compensate for specific environmental opportunities so long ago, for the specific features that make evolutionary time different from our time. On slide 16, why this compensation? Answer, something in the environment that reduces the bad effect of a set of alleles also reduces the rate at which they vanish out of the population, generation after generation, through natural selection. Frequencies of such alleles rise until outflow balances inflow, and an equilibrium balance is restored. Creating regularities out of the logic of natural selection, overriding the vicissitudes of environmental settings. So as I turn to slide 17, the answers on the last slides are the answers that evolutionary demographic theory is proposing to questions about regularities. Where do the regularities in age-specific demographic schedules arise? So if you think of those proposed answers as hypotheses, we could ask, how well are the hypotheses faring when confronted with new genomic data? There's a lot coming. One of the major studies in science, by Tennyson and all, and there are a number of other studies. And these studies, are looking at the genome, are giving good encouragement to this picture. So the answers, we can say yes. Present-day subjects from European and African populations are being found to carry loads from a large pool of slightly deleterious alleles. Yes, the estimates of numbers of alleles combined with Haldane's principle are implying small effects on average, allele by allele, accumulating into substantial aggregate effects on fitness over evolutionary time. And yes, these estimates indicate that most of the alleles derived from mutations dating back before the Neolithic, before modern civilization, is disturbing the equilibrium. So, in summary, today, an ancient legacy of genetic load is interacting today with a transformed environment. And I see our next challenge for biodemographers is to understand how the age-specific signatures of effects imprinted in the past translate into age-specific survival outcomes observable around us in our transformed environment. Well, survival outcomes that are mediated by comparative social environments and social behaviors in the things that are going to be featured in the talks you are about to hear. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ken.